Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachas Daf Samach Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn our attention to the top of Daf Samach Tes, the second line from the top at the end, we see another triangle. This is a series marking, as are all the geometric forms in our Gemara marking system. This series started on the previous daf during our previous shiur. We noted at the time that the triangle in this sugya represents a series of questions that are raised, and these questions will continue until daf ayin omen aleph. In the course of the questions, we will encounter Rami Bar Chamo as having asked 4 of the questions, and his name has been emphasized with a double underline with dots in it. This was all explained in our previous shiur. In our Gemara marking system, which features the Shas Ozer as the cornerstone of our system, we feature topic headings and structural notes in the outside margin. The topic headings are entitled Nosei. In this case, we have written on the outside margin, Haim Hanotza Oy Chanota, Shovim Lahashrosha. These are stages in crop development. Hanotza may be translated as budding. Chanota is a fuller level of development. Are they parallel to the taking of root that is characteristic of the grains? Kedei sheshtei halechim matir beperos ilon. The Shita Mekubetzes that's found on this page under Os Aleph points out that it seems from our Gemara that peros ha'ilon, fruit of the trees, also needs the allowing capacity of the Shtei HaLechem, which is offered on Shavuos, the 2 loaves that are brought together with the Kivsei Atzeres. They allow the consumption of the season's new fruits. The Shita Mekubetzes points out that in an earlier Gemara it didn't seem like that, but nevertheless, that earlier Gemara that seemed to indicate that you don't need a heter for the peros was only b'di'evid. That's only post facto, but we prefer to have one wait in his consumption of new fruits, the season's new fruits, until the Shtei HaLechem are offered. So we now turn our attention to the Mivneh heading under this Nosei. You can see the Mivneh means structure. And in our structural notes, we attempt to explain the role of the different geometric forms as they appear in each new sugya. Here you see a house form featured. If you scan down this daf, you will notice quite a few of these house forms appearing. We've noted in our note on the outside margin, La'orech Omud Zeh, through the length of this Omud of Gemara, Simun Zeh, this marking, Misamein, it signifies Hashlavim, the stages, Kedei Lohovin Mahu Hasheilo Shinishalo. At each point of the Gemara, a new question was introduced, and that we've already pointed out with the triangle marking. So if you skim down the page, you'll notice a number of these triangles. Under each triangle, you'll notice these house forms, because what happens is, as the question is asked, it's not clear what the question is. Therefore, it takes sometimes a few stages of questioning in order to determine, to understand what the question is to begin with. So these house markings will be around those words indicating each new stage of trying to understand what the question is. So we turn to the Gemara text itself. Boy, Romi Bar Chamo, Shtei Halechem. The 2 loaves that are brought on Shavuos that are coming to Matir, the Peros Ha'ilan, fruit of the trees. Hanotza Sharia o Hanota Sharia. The Gemara asks, what do you mean by these terms? My Hanotza u my Hanota. Hanotza is the budding, Hanota is the fuller development of what? If the question is, does one have to wait for the fruit to have budded or for the fruit to have reached chanota, a more mature level? That probably is not the question, because hashta hashrosha sharya, we know that in the case of grains, the mere fact that it took root is sufficient for the shtei halechem to matir. In other words, grains that had taken root before the omer and shtei halechem are brought, they receive the heter, the allowance afforded by the omer and the shtei halechem. So if mere rooting of grains is enough to enable them to enjoy the heter, the allowance, would you think that it needs, that the fruit of the trees needs such a late development? Certainly not. Ela, rather, the question of hanotza and chanota concerns, we'll see, the leaves. Elo hanotza de ole, v'chanota de ole. The Rami Bar Chama is asking, what is needed, what level of development is needed in the case of fruits to enable the shtei halechem to allow them? Is the hanotza of the leaves, the budding of the leaves of the fruit tree, or the development of the leaf? Hanota de ole. Mi havi ki hashrosha, are they like hashrosha? The hashrosha is the taking of root. In the case of grains, oi lo, or maybe not. Teku, so this remains unresolved. In other words, the attempt to parallel leaf development in the case of fruit trees to rooting of grains, this is teku, means it remains unresolved. Next question, boi rovo bar rav chonon. Before embarking on this question, though we just use the term question in the singular, you will see that in fact the question develops into many sub-questions. We have a topic heading that accompanies this Gemara, because very shortly you will notice in the Gemara text itself diamonds. In fact, if you scan down the page, you should notice three diamonds. These are explained under our Nosei Mivneh heading in the outside margin. These represent Gimel, three Noisim, three topics or issues, Shehem Totza'ah, that are outgrowths, Mishe'elas Rava Bar Chonon, regarding, or outgrowths of the question that Rava Bar Chonon raises, Legabi Chitin Shezoron Bakarka. In a very general form, Rava Bar Chonon asks concerning wheat seeds, wheat kernels, wheat grains that are planted in the ground. So if we scan down the page at the focus on the diamonds, the first question will concern a matter relating to the Oimer. The second question regards an issue that's totally unrelated to Omer, rather it's an issue in the realm of finances, Oino. Oino has to do, in general, with overcharging or mischarging. It's a matter of dine momentus, financial concern. So the second topic that will be dealt with under the heading of Chitin Shezoron Bakarka will be in the realm of Oino. And the third diamond concerns Nishiboin Alehen, the ability to force someone to take an oath, to swear concerning a matter involving Chitin Shezoron Bekarka. In general, the issue of Oino and Shavuos is that Oino and Shavuos do not apply to things that are considered land or real estate. There's a concept, Ein Oino Bekarkois and Ein Nishiboin Al HaKarkos. So in the course of our analysis here, when we will be focusing on wheat that was planted in the ground, we'll be interested in knowing what the status of that wheat is. In addition, we have another marking that we will see in this sugya. There's a double underline with a design in between. You will notice this repeats itself under each diamond heading. we have written under that as an explanation, Simun Ze, this marking, Bo Lahavlit, comes to point out, to signify, the Oison Shnei Tzdodim Mofiim Bechol Echod Hanoisim Shaleim Nishelas Hashelos. When the Gemara will be asking its questions, it will be eventually when the Gemara gets to the stage of understanding what is being asked, the question will be posed in an Aleph Oy Dilmo Beis fashion. For those of you who are familiar, that should be a rather familiar structure. For those of you who are not, the questions posed many times in the Gemara have two sides to it, two possibilities, and we call that Aleph, possibility one, O Dilma, or possibility Beis two. In this case, what we have noticed is that under each topic heading signified by the diamond, when we figure out what question is being asked, the same two possibilities arise. And if you scan down the page before we read the Gemara and before we even understand what is happening, just to see the balance of this Gemara, notice, if you see the first time you see the double underline with design in it, across more or less from the point in which we made our remark on the side of the Gemara, so you see there's a little aleph, and it says, Keman deshavya bakado, damya, oy dilmon, then beis, botil, luhu, legabi ara. A few lines down the page, about the middle way down, you'll see again this double underline with the aleph over it, dekeman deshadyo bekado damyo. Oy dilmo, the next line, you see the beis botil, botilu legabi aro. And under the third diamond, where nishboyin alein appears, you see again the same two aleph, oy dilmo, beis, with our marking emphasis. With all of that introduction in mind, we now turn to the beginning of this opening question, which really is an umbrella question, as we pointed out. Boy Rovo Barav Chonan. Chitin Shezoron Bakarka. Wheat that's planted in the ground. Omer Matiron, Oein Omer Matiron. Does the Omer enable them to be allowed to remove the Isser Chodosh from them or not? Hechit Domi. Well, what are the circumstances of the wheat planted in the ground? You'll notice we're seeing again this house marking, which indicates stages in trying to understand what the question is. So, e da ashrush, if you're talking about wheat that took root before the Omer, Tanino, we have a source that deals with that. There's no need for Rava to ask about it. E dolo ashrush, Tanino. And if you're talking about wheat that has not taken root, that also has been taught. This non. And here you have a Tanaic source. You can see a frame around the next two lines. This is characteristic of our Gemara marking system, where we frame off Tanaic material to set it apart from the rest of the Gemara. So here there is a Tanaic source that says, Im hishrishu kodem l'omer, omer matiron. If the grains took root before the omer, when the omer is offered, those grains are allowed. They are no longer chodosh. V'im lav, if they did not take root before the Omer was offered on the 16th of Nisan, then Asurin, those grains are not allowed to be enjoyed Ad Shiavoy Omer Habo, until next year's Omer offering. So, what is the question that Rava is asking? Loi Tzricha, the question is necessary to be asked under the following circumstances. What we've done is we've dashed underlined the next two lines, so that as we go on in the Gemara, we can focus on this case. This case will be applicable to all of the subsequent questions. So, the cases, dechatzdinhu, vizarinhu, koidem lo'imer. You had a crop, dechatzdinhu, that you harvested. And at the point that you harvested it, the omer had not been offered yet. Vizarinhu, and then you replanted, or you planted that which you harvested. You planted it before the Omer. Then the Omer came, passed by, the Komebaya lay, and the question that Rava Bar Rav Chonan is asking is, Mahu Linkuti Umecha Minayu. Can he gather them from the ground and eat them. And the issue here is gather them from the ground before they take root. The Gemara now analyzes the two sides of this question. You'll notice, as we mentioned in our introductory remarks, that there are two sides, and they've been highlighted with a double underline and design under it. So, Aleph, keman deshadyo bekada damyo, visharinu oimer, do we view the seeds in the ground that were replanted before taking root as if they're stored in a jug? That's keman deshadyo bekada, as if they were thrown into a jug, and as such, the omer, visharinu omer, the omer will be effective in enabling one to enjoy those seeds. Oi dilmo, botil luhu legavi aro. Or do you say that they become botel, voided, if you will, to the ground? They become subsidiary to the ground. In other words, they're not viewed as if they're simply stored in a jug by virtue of the fact that they haven't taken root, but rather, since you put them in the ground for planting purposes, they are now considered the ground, and the Omer will not be matir that. Another question. Yeshlan oino oy ein lohen oino. The seeds that we just described, is there a problem of oino concerning them? Heichidomi. Well, once again, the Gemara doesn't really understand what is being asked. What are the circumstances? I lemo di omarle shadoi bo shisa. The Osu Sahadi the Amri Delo Shoda Bo Elo Hamisha. If the circumstances are where someone hired a worker to put to plant six sa'a of seed, and witnesses come and inform us that he planted only five sa'a of seed, the discrepancy of 1/6 is in general the discrepancy that enables us to label a deal as having as being in violation of oino. The result of being in violation of oino in general is that the deal stands. However, compensation is made to the wronged party. So if these are the circumstances where I hired someone to plant six sa'ah of seed, and someone and witnesses told me that he planted only five. Well, such a case doesn't come under the ono heading for a different reason. Ve'omar Rava called over Sheva Mida v'Sheva Mishkal v'Sheva Minyan. Any deal that was defined or delineated by size, by mida, or by weight, or by number. When a deal is made and an actual amount is featured in the deal, then afilu pochos michdei ono choser, then even if there is a discrepancy of less than a sixth, the entire deal is off. So it doesn't have the characteristics of ono. As we mentioned before, ono is a situation where the basic deal stands and the wronged party receives compensation. The difference is made up. But if you have a deal where a specific amount was delineated, then any discrepancy or divergence from that mentioned amount causes the entire deal to be undone. Ella, rather, what must be the circumstances? The Omar lay shadoi bo kideboi lo. Someone hired a worker and said, plant the field with the grains according to what is suitable for it. The Asu Sadi Omri, witnesses came and said, "De lo shodabo kideboi lo," and they testified that he didn't plant a sufficient amount. Yesh lohen ono. Do we say that this would fall under the ono circumstances? And how is that? Because the keman deshadyo bekado damyo, the yeshlo no, the seeds that are in the ground that were, let's say, just freshly planted, they haven't taken root yet, and therefore they're considered as portables. They're considered as a non-landed, non-real estate entity, and as such, the rules of ono can take hold. Oy dilma, or do we say that seeds put into the ground, botiluhu legavi ara, become subservient or subsidiary to the ground, they become part of the ground, and as a result of that, there's another rule, and that rule says, ein oino bekarkois, so that the claim for compensation would not be in order. A third question concerning these freshly planted seeds. Nishboyin alehen oy ein nishboyin alehen. Can one party force the other party to swear concerning these seeds? Kedeshadyo bekadadamyo uchemetatali damo v'nishboyin alehen. Do we say that seeds that are freshly planted are considered as if they are in a jug, and therefore they're like portables, and as such the rules of oaths takes hold? Oidilma botiluhu agav aro, or do we say that they become voided to the ground, they become subsidiary to the ground, u chimikarkoi domu v'ein nishboyin alehen, and as a result of them becoming botel to the ground, they then take on the characteristics of real estate, and the rule says that ein nishboyin al hakarkos, oaths are not taken, oaths cannot be forced over matters that are of a real estate nature. Teku. So this remains unresolved. So we have this question of freshly planted seeds. How do we look at it? We saw this question raised in the context of, does the Omer matir it? Is there a din of oino shayach to it? Is there can shvuas be applied? And this remains unresolved. Namely, do we view them as in a jug, being that they haven't taken root yet, they're freshly planted seeds, or do we say by the mere fact that he put them in the ground, that causes them to become part of the ground, and therefore considered karka? Boi Romi Barchamo. And as we glance at the outside margin, we have a nosei, a topic heading, Chitim Usorim Biglole Bokar. We'll be talking about wheat and barley found in the waste or the dung of cattle. The Gemara will touch on two topics, Tumas Oichlin, that's the realm where we say that food, something that's viewed as a food item, can absorb ritual impurity, and a second realm, namely of Menochos. Can these seeds that you found in the Gloli Boker be used for the preparation of a mincha? That's a general presentation. However, we will have to see what exactly is the question as we go into the Gemara. Boi Romi Barchamo, Chitin Shebegloli Boker, Usaurin Shebegloli Behemo, Mahu. Wheat and barley that one finds in the waste matter of animals. What is their status? Well, lamai. Once again, you can see the house form indicating stages in trying to understand what is really the question. You'll notice in this case there are three stages till we get to the final understanding of what is being asked. And that's all before we can really present the question with its two sides. So, stage one, I lemo litmuye tumas oichlin, if Romi Barchamo is asking concerning the realm of Tumas Oichlin, Tanina, he doesn't need to ask about that. We have a Tanaic source that would answer all of those questions, and it says, Chitin Shibarei Bokar, Usorin Shibaglole Behemo, wheat and barley found in the waste of animals. If Chishev Alehen Lachila, if while these seeds were in the waste, a person intended, mentally, made a mental note, or a mental intention, of desiring to eat them. Ein metame tumas oichlin. Those seeds will not absorb Tumas Ochlin, because at this point they're still in the dung, and therefore we won't view them as food. Lokton la'achila, if he picked them out of the dung for eating purposes, then mitama tumas ochlin, then they are subject to the rules of tumas ochlin. Then they are viewed as food, and all the rules of tumas ochlin will set in. So the question of Rami Bar Chama concerning the chitin shebeloli boker is not in the realm of tumas ochlin, elo limenochos. Rather, he is asking possibly about using the grains found in the dung to, let us say, dry them out, grind them, and make meal offerings to the Almighty. The Gemara says, "Pshita dolo." That's obviously clear as well that that will not be acceptable. Hakriveuno lifchasecha, hayirotzecha, o hayisa panecha. There is a pasuk that indicates that what one would give to the Almighty should be of no less importance than that which would one give to a pechos. He is a type of leader, a type of governor. And just like you wouldn't present to an important governmental official some product made from seeds of this origin, so certainly they would not be acceptable as an offering to the Almighty. Lo tzricha, rather, what is necessary to clarify or to ask about, dinaktinu, he gathered the seeds from the dung. Fizarinu, he planted them. And from those seeds there grew new plants. Vikaboy lasie minochos minayu, my. And he wants to produce minochos, meal offerings, from the new growth. What is the din? So now there are two sides. Mishum de mi suta hu, is the consideration regarding seeds found in dung a question of something that's mo, something that's disgusting? The kevan de zarinu, but since we're talking about seeds that were not directly used, but rather they were replanted, ozda le mi sutaihu, the disgusting aspect is gone. Because what we're talking about then is the subsequent growth, the new plants, and therefore it should be okay to make minochas from them. Oy dilma mishum kishusahu, or is one to emphasize the kishusa is the weak or the poor quality. It's understood that grain seeds that are found in dung were weakened, or were there possibly as a result of their interaction with all kinds of chemicals found in the digestive process, the quality of these seeds becomes reduced, and therefore the quality of the plant that grows from these seeds is also of a lesser quality. V'hashtonami krishi, and this factor is true now as well with regard to this new growth. Teku. This remains unresolved. So the issue of using the seeds found in dung, replanting them, and subsequent grains grow from that, and then using the new growth for the production of menachos, this issue remains unresolved. Boy, Romi Bar Chama, another question is raised. And in our topic heading in the outside margin, we've simply referred to this as peel an elephant, shebola kfifo mitzris, that swallowed a basket made of palm fibers. We will see in the Gemara's question, the elephant swallowed this entire basket, and what we're saying, we should also note, is just at the first stage of the Gemara's understanding, and then the basket traveled through its digestive system and came out from at the other end of the animal. It came out of him whole. So this too, though, will be subject to several stages of understanding the question. Let's see it immediately. Boy Rami Bar Chama, peel shebola kfifo mitzris, vehikia derech beis horei. An elephant, a peel is an elephant, that bola swallowed a kfifo mitzris. This is a basket made of palm fibers. And vehikia derech beis horei, and it means it came out of the end of its digestive system, mahu. Well, Lamai, what, with regard to what are you asking this question? And again, you see the house marking indicating stages of understanding. If the question concerns a basket that had become tome, and your question is, now that it swallowed the basket, and it comes out the other end of the animal whole, the tuma that originally was on the basket will no longer be present. Well, if that's the question, there really is no need to ask the question, because a Tanaic source answers that. Tanina, it's taught in the following source. Kol ha-kelim, yordin lidei tumasan, b'machshava. Vessels can become capable of receiving tuma by mere planning that a vessel shall be used as such. So that if you have a vessel, let us say that's in, let's say it's being fashioned, and it's reached a certain stage of manufacture, and you decide at this point, I want to use it as it is. If you decide that, and it's not missing any further stages, it then becomes suitable for absorbing tumah. There's another point which is more relevant to our discussion. The ein oilin mitum asan. Well, this is what's central to our issue now. A kli that had become tome does not depart its tuma. It's ein oilin mitum asan ella b'shinui maise. Only if the vessel that had become tome underwent a physical change to it. If the vessel that had been tome underwent a physical change. An example would be where you had a vessel that was tame and you punched a big hole in it and then refashioned it and thereby fixing it, sealing up the hole. That would remove the tuma. In this case, though, it's very clear that no shinoi maisa took place. The vessel was swallowed whole by the elephant and came out whole. So the issue of bittul tuma, of canceling the tuma of such a basket, would not be something that Rami Bar Hama would ask about, because the answer to it is contained in this Tanaic source. Loi tzricha, no. It is necessary to ask the question under the following circumstances. De bola hutzin, the elephant swallowed not a complete basket, but rather leaves or reeds or fibers. The animal swallowed the raw material, the material that would be used in making such a basket. And eventually these leaves came out of the animal. And then after they came out of the animal, after it went through its digestive tract, I took these reeds, the avdinu kfifo mitzvos, and then I fashioned them into a basket. Mi havi equal? Do we say that the reeds have become mi'ukam? Mi'ukam means are the result of digestion. Have a lay, if you look at the reeds as being digested material, then they are kikli glolim, kikli adomo, they are like vessels fashioned out of feces or fashioned out of mud, the ein mekablim tuma. Vessels that are considered kli glolim, feces made vessels, vessels whose material is animal waste, those type of vessels do not absorb tuma. The Omamar, Kli Avonim, Kli Glolim, Kli Adoma, it's been taught that stone vessels, dung vessels, and mud vessels do not mekabel tuma, lo midivrei Torah, v'lo midivrei Sofrim, not on a Torah level, and not even on a rabbinic level. So that on the first side of the question, and you may have noticed at the bottom of Omid Aleph, there was a little Aleph that we had written in to the area, the line, the last, over the last line. That means the first side of our Aleph O Dilma analysis. So that the first side is suggesting that maybe the reeds are viewed simply as digested material, and when they come out of the animal as waste, they are waste. and whatever you make from them afterwards will not mekabel tuma, because they'll have a din, they'll have a status of clay glolim. Oy dilma, or maybe lo have ikol. On the other hand, maybe we say that they're not viewed as having been digested. So that's the basic question of the Gemara. At this stage, we see a new geometric form. We call this the volcano shape, or trapezoid, and we explain what is going to happen under in our Mivneh heading in the outside margin. Where this shape appears, it appears here, and a few lines later, Nisyonos attempts, Lifshoit She'elas Kfifa Hamitzris Shebola Peel, to resolve the question concerning the Kfifa Mitzris, or more accurately, the reeds that the elephant swallowed. We want to try to resolve this Mimaisa from an incident, Shebolu Ze'evim, where a couple of wolves swallowed Shnei Tinoikas, two babies, Vihikium, and these babies that were swallowed by the wolves exited from the wolves' posterior as part of their digestive, at the end of their digestive tract. And in that case, in this rather sad story of the children having been swallowed and then cast out of the animal through its other end, the case had come up, and v'tiaru es habosar, v'timu es ha'atzamos. We know there that they viewed as the flesh of the babies that came out was no longer viewed as, let's say, human flesh. Human flesh basically is mitame bo'ehel, but there it went through the digestion of the animals and it lost its tuma ability. And on the other hand, the bones were still capable of communicating tuma. So the Gemara asks, if you're asking about the reeds that were swallowed by the animal, why not conclude the issue from the case of the ze'evim? So let's now read this in the Gemara from the fifth line from the top. Tifshot le mehodomer ula mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yehoshadak. Why not conclude the issue based on Ula's teaching? Maisa ubalu ze'evim shnei tinoikos be'ever hayardein. An incident took place where wolves swallowed two children in the area of Ever Hayardein. The Ever Hayardein in the Gemara is a reference to the eastern side of the eastern bank of the Jordan River. And it has to be added here that the children apparently came out whole on the other end of the animal's digestive tract. And the incident came in front of the rabbis, and they ruled that the flesh of these babies is not metameh. So we see from that which comes out of the animal's digestive tract is considered equal, is considered consumed, digested. So the same thing we could say about the reeds or the palm fibers. And therefore they would be classified as kli galolim. So the question is, why not answer from that case? The Gemara says, I'll tell you, I can't answer the issue of the palm fibers from the case of the baby flesh. Shiny boser de rochich. Human flesh, as compared to palm fibers, the human meat is very soft. It's rach, rochich, it's soft. And therefore, it's subject to being consumed and digested. We can't say the same thing with regard to the palm fibers. The Gemara, though, asks, still, looking at that incident, v'lifshot misefa, why not conclude from the second aspect of that case, the timu eswatsamos, where the rabbis ruled that the bones of those babies will communicate tuma. So, and if you emphasize that aspect, then we see that they're not considered as consumed. And let's say the same thing regarding the palm fibers, and they would not be considered clay glolim, and hence would be subject to kabbalas tuma. The Gemara rejects this attempt as well. Shiny atzamos da'akushi tvei. Bones are different because they're especially hard. And therefore, bones going through the digestive tract, we can rule concerning them that they are not considered digested because of their hardness factor. Whereas palm fibers may be, yes, considered as digested. So the issue of the palm fibers is not resolvable from the incident involving the wolves. So as far as this is concerned, the question remains unresolved. We had presented the two sides, whether we view it as equal or not, and the Gemara doesn't present a final response. The Gemara goes on to a new question. Boi, Rabbi Zera. Chitin sheyordu ve'ovim mahu. In order to understand these words, we will glance at the Rashi. Rashi you find close to the top of the page, sheyordu ve'ovim im hamotar. Grains that came down from the ovim are the clouds together with the rain. Well, what happened? Kesheshosu ha'ovim bokyanus, when the clouds were absorbing their water content, which eventually turns into rain, they were over the ocean and absorbing the water over the ocean. Bolu sfina malea chitin. The clouds absorbed a boat full of wheat as well. So the clouds, having absorbed the grains, now when the rain fell, the rain was accompanied by those very wheat grains. So Rabbi Zera asks, Chitin shiod b'oven mahu? Well, lemai, regarding what are you asking? E limenochos amai lo? If your question regards to make minochos meal offerings from those grains, why not? Elo l'shtei halechem mai? Rather, the question concerns not a standard mincha, but rather the two loaves that are brought on Shavuos. The question has two sides. And you can see, we've marked this off as Aleph, and two lines later, we squiggle line O Dilma, Beis. One side is Mimo Shavuos Seichem Amrachmona. The Torah, in the context of the Shtei Alechem, says Mimo Shavuos Seichem, that you shall bring it from Moshvo Seichem. Moshvo Seichem means your dwellings. And that is la'afuke dechutza loretz delo. That may be coming to simply exclude using grains that grew in the diaspora outside of Eretz Yisrael. Avol de'ovim shabir domi. However, grains that descend from the clouds, that would be okay, because according to this side, mimosh vosechem simply is to exclude grains that grew from the ground of Chutzlaretz, but not these kind of grains. Oy Dilma, or possibly Mimoshvo Sechem equals Dafka, meaning that you shall bring the Shtei Alechem from where you dwell. Well, where you dwell is V'afilu Dovin Namilo. People don't dwell in the clouds. And therefore, clouds would not fit under, cloud-originated grains would not fit under this requirement of Mimo Shvo Sechem. The Gemara asks, this whole case seems to be unusual, to put it mildly. Umihika ki hai gavno? Is there such a thing? Could there be such a thing? So the Gemara answers, In fact, we have a story on record. Ke de Odi Taya. This is a name, Odi Taya. Taya is an expression usually referring to an Arab. So like Eddie the Arab. Nachisa le, there descended from the sky, Rum Kizva Chiti Betlosa Parsi. Rum is a height of one tefach. Kizva is a tefach. One tefach height or depth of wheat covered an area of three parsa. So we had a parsa is a land measure. So over an area of three parsa of land, there fell from the sky a tefach deep layer of wheat. So we see that such a story, such an incident could happen. Boi Reb Shimon ben Pazi, Shiboiles Sheviyoshlish Koidum Loimer. Before we actually read this Gemara, we'll read this line again. Let's glance at our topic heading in the outside margin. Shiboiles Sheviyoshlish, a stalk that developed a third in its growth. Koidem Lomer. It reached a shlish of development, a third of its growth, prior to the Omer. The Okra, he then uprooted this stalk. The Shosla Laachar Omer, and replanted it after the Omer. The Hosifa, and there was additional growth. Haim Ha'omer Hitiro Oiloi. Does the Omer serve to allow the use of this new additional growth? Boser Iker Azlinon, do you emphasize the origin? Now, the origin of this plant, of this new growth, essentially is something that the Omer was matir. Because after you pulled it out of the ground, after it was a third developed, and then the Omer was brought, at that point, it becomes mutter. The Isser Chodesh no longer applies. And the fact that it grew more should be of no consequence. That's if you emphasize the Iker, Boser Iker Azlinon. Oy, a second possibility is Boser Toisefes Azlinon, that you emphasize the new growth, the additional growth. And that additional growth did not have the good fortune of the Omer being brought before it. And therefore, it would not be considered mutter. Turning to the Gemara, Boi Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi. She boiles a stalk of grain. Shevia shlish kodim le omer, developed a third of its development before the omer. The omer was at that point was brought. The okra, he uprooted it. The fact that it had been a third developed is way beyond taking root, and we know that the omer is matir things that took root beforehand. So this certainly experienced the heter of the omer. The allowance afforded by the Omer offering. Vishasa, the Achar Omer, he replanted it after the Omer. Vahosifa, and there was additional growth. Mahu, Boser Iker Azlinon, Vishari Omer, do you emphasize or go according to the origin of this plant? And the origin of this plant is that it received the allowance of the Omer. Oidilma, Boser Toisefes Azlinon, V'ad shiyavo oimer haba, or do you look at the fact that there was additional growth and it won't be mutter until the next year's omer is brought? So at this point, the question is raised. As we saw in two questions ago, the Gemara here says, well, why not resolve the question from the following? And this essentially is a question, meaning why don't you resolve it using the following information? And we've indicated this as a long question with the shin that you find the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara marking. Shin is a she'ela with a vertical descending dashed line indicating the length of this question. So the Gemara asks, Tifshot le mehoti omar Rabbi Avo omar Rabbi Yochanan. Why not conclude your question, respond to your question from the following? Yaldo shesibcha bizikena, a branch of an orla tree. Orla is the prohibition of benefiting from fruit trees, from the fruit coming from fruit trees, prior to 3 years of life, of the tree's life. In other words, during the first 3 years of a tree's life, it's orla. In this case, he took a branch from an orla tree that had fruit on it. Shesibcha bezikeno, he inserted it, attached or grafted it onto a tree that was an older tree, namely a tree that's completely mutter. Uba peros, and on this branch that he inserted, there were fruit. We can call them orla fruit. Afilu hoisif bimosayim. If those fruit developed even 200 times their original size, the size that they were at the point of the grafting, and in general, we should note that if you have a mixture of orla with non-orla, if the non-orla, the mutter, the allowed fruits, outnumber in a mixture 200 times the amount of orla, in other words, if one orla fruit fell into a box containing 200 times that amount of allowed fruit, the mixture would be mutter. Orla is botel. Here, we are saying, even if the subsequent growth, while the branch was attached to a heter tree. It grew 200 times its original size. This fruit remains forbidden. It's usur. We see so far that we seem to emphasize the ikur, the origin. The Omer Oshmur Bar Nechmein Omer of Yunison, Botzal Sheshosel Bekerem, a botzal, sometimes translated as an onion, that had been planted in a vineyard. That is another problem called Kilei HaKerem. Kilei HaKerem refers to other kinds of plants that grow in a vineyard. It's forbidden to mix other plants or plant them within a grape vineyard. Here you have this botzal, onion, that was planted in a vineyard, the ne'kar hakerem. In the meantime, the vineyard was removed, was uprooted. The botzal continued to grow. Hafilu hoisif b'masayim, even if it grew 200 times the amount that it had been at the time that the vineyard was still there. Aser, the onion, though it grew 200 times, and like we said before by Orla, the amount for bittel, for voiding, when it comes to a Kilei HaKerem mixture is also 200. Here, though, even if it grew 200 times its original size when it was still in the vineyard, it remains usur. What do we see? So we see that when it comes to the issue of subsequent growth, we emphasize the ikur, what it originally was. If we take that information and plug it back into the question of the stalk of grain that had grown a third before the Omer, was uprooted and replanted after the Omer, well, let's just say, emphasize the origin, and being that this stalk enjoyed the allowance afforded by the Omer, because the Omer was offered when this grain had already developed a third, so that it was replanted and that there was subsequent growth, would be of no consequence and not present any problem of chodosh. The Gemara responds, bearing in mind we're coming off the heels of this question of why not answer the issue from the case of the Yaldish Yisibil's Gaino and the Botzal Shos Bekerem. Gemara says, "He gufo kome bayole." This very issue is what's bothering Reb Shimon ben Pazi. Two sides. Now, Aleph, Oy Dilma, Beis. Mifshat pshito lei l'rabonon de boser ikur azlinon. Is it a matter of certainty, of a matter that's obvious that you go according to the origin? Lo shno l'kulo v'lo shno l'chumra, making no difference whether the result is one of leniency or of stringency. Oy Dilma, Sfuke Mesafkalahu. Or this conclusion that we saw under the names of Rabbi Avon, Rabbi Yochanan, and Rav Shmuel Achmenion, Rabbi Yonison, that you go following the origin, they in fact may be in doubt regarding that topic. Ulechumra Amrinon, Lekulul Amrinon, and they, those are referring to the names we underlined in the last few lines, they had ruled that you go Boser Iker only because the result was one of stringency. That, in fact, was the case with the Orla question and the Kilei HaKerem question, where even though those vegetations increased in size 200-fold, they remained Oser because of their prohibited origins of Orla and Kilei HaKerem respectively. However, if by ruling follow the Iker, you're going to end up with a leniency, as was the question concerning the stalk of grain that had developed a third, and there by following the Iker we say the Omer served to allow it, and we would not pay attention to the subsequent growth and view the whole thing as mutter, maybe then you wouldn't receive the heter ruling and say, go basar ikar. So this issue of how or under or when do you say go basar ikar? Do you say it across the boards no matter what the ruling is, leniency or stringency? Or do you say it's not clear and we'll say basar ikar only if the ruling results in a stringency? This issue remains unresolved. Teku. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.